League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the WTF1 That Time When podcast. As you can probably tell, I am not Matt. Matt's on holiday, so you've got me, Jess, filling in as host today. And I'm joined by our resident F1 encyclopedias and fountains of all weird F1 knowledge, Tommy and Dan. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
How are we?
We're good. Good.
Ready to talk about some obscure F1 stuff with you.
Absolutely. So as you'll know, if you've been keeping up with our That Time When series, this podcast is where we talk about some strange moments and stories in F1 history. Although this week we are sort of cheating, as it's technically a story about a sports car race, but it is a story about an F1 legend, so it counts.
It counts. Yeah.
So today we're going to be talking about that time when Juan Manuel Fangio was kidnapped before a race.
Yeah.
So I don't even know where to start with a story like that. Should we kind of do a little intro into who Fangio was? Because I'm sure listeners will know his name.
Yeah, but maybe not know quite how incredible he was. So I think it's important for any sort of new fans to know that Fangio was definitely the Lewis Hamilton of his day.
Of the first days, really.
Yeah, he was the original, he was the megastar of motorsport, really. He completely dominated the 50s. He won 5 world titles, which obviously wasn't matched until Michael Schumacher did it in 2002. Mm-hmm. So held for a very, very long time. And Fangio, he was nicknamed El Maestro. He still has the best win percentage in F1 history, which I've got here is 46.15%.
Yeah.
So he nearly won half the races he competed in, which is
pretty incredible.
Pretty incredible, even for the little amount he did at the time.
You compare that to, say, Schumacher. His is around 30%, and Hamilton's is 30, like just over 32%, I think. But I worked out that for Hamilton to match Fangio's win ratio, he'd have to win the next 67 races in a row.
Oh wow!
Wow.
So like, that puts in perspective, like how good Fangio was in his time.
Yeah.
I mean, do we have any idea how many races are we talking about back then, though?
So he had about 8 in the year? Sometimes 5 or 6.
Yeah, it was like it ranged from sort of 6 to 10 sort of thing.
He did 52 races and won 24. But 52 races, I guess, is like, well, how many has Marcus Ericsson done?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
200 or something.
Yeah, it kind of puts into perspective just how crazy the current F1 calendar is when you think about how many more extra races we're currently doing. Mm. And they want to do more.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. But you have down here, Tommy, in the notes, 1957 German Grand Prix as the greatest F1 win ever. Why is that?
Yeah, I was looking into some of his wins, and many people believe this is the greatest F1 win of all time. Obviously, there are many epic victories. But if you think that kind of Jenson Button's 2011 Canada win is good, his was on another level. So he was winning the race, had a bit of a botched pit stop. And this is at the Nürburgring, the old Nürburgring, the full track. Had a bit of a botched pit stop and lost the lead and seemingly was out of it. He was like 40 seconds behind. And then in the last 10 laps, he broke the Nürburgring lap record 9 times and was 15 seconds a lap quicker than, I think it was Mike Hawthorn that was...
Yeah, it's Hawthorn and Collins
who was catching in the Ferrari. So yeah, pretty mega drive and one that established him. And like people were just like, okay, that's why he's still considered one of the greatest of all time, even now.
It's worth remembering as well that this wasn't just like an F1 driver like now who's sort of late 20s, early 30s. He was 47 at the time he did that drive. So like most
incredible.
Of his, like the height of his career, you think was probably spoiled by the Second World War. like a lot of drivers of that time, but he was still like unbelievably good even in his late 40s.
Yeah, it's crazy to think like what drivers had to kind of come up against back then as well. And so he famously retired from F1 for a citing that it was too dangerous, and he didn't want to. He was the cars were too quick, it was too dangerous, and he wasn't enjoying it anymore.
Well, he sort of 1957, that's when he won his last title, and then the following year he did the problem was that he drove for Maserati at the time, mm-hmm. but they pulled out of F1 the following year, so he had to drive a privately entered Maserati in his home race at the start of 1958. It wasn't very competitive because rules had changed, and also the car was like a 5-year-old design, so he sort of realized that, hang on a minute, this is very dangerous, the only car I can drive is uncompetitive and, you know, quite dangerous sort of thing.
You can't imagine a driver that good not being without a drive. I know, like, there's some midfield people that deservedly be in F1, but imagine like Lewis Hamilton if Mercedes pulled the plug and Lewis Hamilton was like, oh wait, I don't have an F1 drive, and actually wanted to drive. It'd be insane.
He sort of lost motivation a bit the following year. I think the drive in the Nürburgring as well scared him a little bit, because when he won that race, he said, I did things in the car I never want to do again.
So it's 1958, and this is kind of where our story starts, around the Cuban Grand Prix sports car race, which Fangio is taking part in. And this is when it starts to get a little more interesting, because around this time, it's kind of in the middle of the Cuban Revolution, and all kinds of political things are happening in the country, but they still want to put on a sports car race. So
yeah, I mean, they had the race the previous year as well, which Fangio did actually win. But yeah, 1958 was the year in question when this kidnapping took place.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the Cuban Grand Prix was set up by the existing government. What's his name? I've got it down here.
President Batista.
Fulgencio Batista. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. But yeah, he set up the race the previous year because, one, it was to try and make people think, oh, look, Cuba's, everything's fine in Cuba. Look at this massive sporting event we've got. And also to promote the country as like a tourist destination. And there was loads of money. They say that they would pay drivers to come and, like, handsomely to come and compete in the race.
So I guess that didn't sit well with the revolutionaries, and they were pretty dead set on disrupting anything that this president was putting on. And so decided to descend onto this famous sports car race.
Yeah, so like the Cuban rebels, which were for Fidel Castro, who this blew my mind actually. So a year after this, Fidel Castro became prime minister / president of Cuba, and he was until 2008.
Yeah,
which is pretty mad if you think that how long ago that was, and how long he reigned. But yeah, Fidel Castro was wanted to. He had this rebellion group, and he tried to disrupt the race. So his idea was, what better way to disrupt the race than kidnap the star driver and completely embarrass the current president?
Yeah.
So what actually happened? Do we have records of what actually happened at the kidnapping?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the night before the race, Fangio was in his hotel sort of with a few other drivers and his friends and family having a drink at the bar, and 9 people came in. One of them had a pistol and just went up and basically said, come with us. And he thought it was a joke at first, but then he realised it wasn't a joke. So then he was just basically forced to escort it to a car outside with this group of people, like not knowing what's going on, sort of thing.
Yeah, he was in Hotel Lincoln in Havana, and got kidnapped at gunpoint by the Cuban rebels. And word spread quite quickly around the world that Fangio had been kidnapped.
Which I guess is what they wanted.
They wanted to embarrass the government as much as possible. And many people, I guess, believed that the race would be cancelled, or they had to do something about it, like try and find him. But he stayed prisoner, I guess, for quite some time, and they did actually do the race without him.
So how long was he held hostage?
He was taken to a location, then I think he was moved 2 more times, so that because the government, obviously, as soon as they heard that their star driver had been kidnapped, they just sent people out to look for him. So they moved him around and eventually just stayed in this hideout.
I've got here that as well, they the Cuban government employed like more police and bodyguards to look after the other drivers, hoping that the same fate wouldn't happen to them. Right. So yeah, because they were worried that more drivers might get kidnapped, I guess. But yeah, like you say, he was held hostage in three different houses.
Yeah.
I got down, and it was 29 hours he was held captive for. Nothing out of the like, there was nothing too sort of like horrific. Like
it wasn't
a torture or anything like that. It was more to prove a point.
Yeah,
he was very much just there. You know, he was used as bait, I guess, for them.
Yeah, from the outset when they kidnapped him, they said, look, we're literally not going to hurt you and we'll let you go after the race, but this is for our cause and we're trying to, you know, upset the order sort of thing. So there was no, like, he was treated quite well when he was being kept captive. So, like, they gave him things to do and chatted with him and stuff. So
he got to listen to the race on the radio, I read as well.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
had the radio so he could keep up to date with the race, what was going on.
And I've heard reports that actually Fangio remained friends with his captors post-release.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Which is, I mean, is that Stockholm Syndrome or did he just understand the cause and kind of felt obliged to be friends with them? Which is, you wouldn't imagine really that somebody who'd been kidnapped would befriend their kidnappers, but I guess
there were some quotes from him that he had no interest in politics. He had no interest in some of the things that the captors were talking to him about, but I guess the fact that they did nothing other than use him to help kind of start a new era in Cuba, he was like, well, it didn't really bother him very much. And isn't there talk of he sent Christmas cards and stuff to them or sorts of things?
Yeah, well, when he years later, in I think the 1980s, he was working for Mercedes-Benz and he went to sign a trade deal with Cuba, and he actually met the person behind like the whole kidnapping operation there and was treated really well. And at one of his birthdays,
I guess they were in charge.
Yeah, yeah,
the country,
yeah, so, yeah, yeah. And yeah, at one of his birthdays, he's got on his 80th birthday, he got a message saying, "From your friends, the kidnappers." So it's like,
I mean, at least they could see the funny side in it, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
But the race itself wasn't exactly all laughs and sunshine at all, was it?
No,
it didn't go to plan. I mean, the race already having their star driver kidnapped wasn't the greatest start. And then within six laps, one of the drivers crashed into some spectators. And I think six or seven of them were killed.
Yeah.
The driver was quite severely injured. And yeah, sadly, that was very common in that kind of era of motor racing.
And but weren't there rumours that Fidel's rebels had actually poured motor oil onto the track itself?
I
think I read somewhere that there were rumors that it was Fidel's people, but
that's
pretty
grim way of doing it.
Absolutely, but I think what it came to light actually that it was it wasn't the case.
Kidnapped Fangio and done it in a sort of non-brutal way, that they wouldn't have to resort to kind of like screwing up with the race.
The thing is, they delayed the race by an hour and a half, still hoping that they could find Fangio.
And that he'd be okay to just jump back in a car
do
a race.
Can you imagine just like, oh, I know you've been kidnapped and probably gone through a pretty traumatic experience, but do you want to win this non-championship sports car race? Because we've got a race to do.
But the thing is, but because he'd been kidnapped and because it had instantly become like global news, it attracted so many fans to the race. So I'd imagine there's probably a bit of overcrowding going
on. And then even worse, that horrible incident took place with everybody watching. It was kind of like a double whammy for Batista.
Yeah, not a good race. I mean, that's weird that they ended up with more fans at the race.
Yeah.
Maybe some of the like Formula One races that need a bit of a boost spectator wise
just kidnapped
Vettel or something before the race.
Well, it's funny because we still talk to this day about how important, even though these F1 races and for countries and cities and tracks to take part in F1, it's a lot of money, but they do receive a different level of attention. you know, we've had tracks like, you know, I think we can safely say a track like Baku has been added to the calendar to try and increase the awareness of Baku as a destination.
Yeah,
absolutely. It's not changed in that sense that when, I was going to say that actually when you were talking about it at the time, that, you know, having a race so you can have bring people to the country, and because I'm will be first to say that I didn't know a thing about Azerbaijan before the Baku started a Formula One race, and well, we've been three times.
Yeah, now. I know. this is our third time.
So yeah,
going to Baku. So yeah, I think, you know, you can see the importance that motor racing brings to people, to places even, and, you know, the economic benefits that they have, but also that they then can become a case of being targeted as well, which in this case it played a massive political move for the rebels.
Yeah.
And as you pointed out a little earlier, it then led not too long afterwards to Fidel taking over and
well, yeah, the 1959 race was cancelled because it was right in the sort of
heat of
Fidel Castro's revolution. So they didn't end up doing the race in 1959, but then did do it one more year in 1960.
And it's not the first time we've ever had kidnapped. Is it the first time we've ever had a kidnapped F1 driver?
I just think
that
so.
I know of, yeah. I can't think of any.
Well, let's hope that we don't get
absolutely
any future ones either.
Well, has anyone seen Adrian Sutil recently?
Who? I haven't seen Esteban Gutierrez for a while either.
I'm sure they're just enjoying
the quiet life.
That was another thing about Fangio. He retired later that year because he was just he did the Indy 500 a bit later on in place of F1 races because he was being offered a load of money to do it, and he was just, his heart wasn't in it anymore. And there's a theory that being kidnapped was part of that, because it made him realise that he was an important global figure and that he didn't want to be subject to that sort of thing again potentially. So he just.
Yeah, I mean, I read a lot about how much Fangio had no care for politics. I mean, you hear some things where, like, racing drivers use their platform, I guess, like, slightly less extreme, but, like, Lewis Hamilton, like, you know, he pushes his, anti-animal cruelty and veganism and all that kind of stuff and plant diets and all that kind of stuff on his Instagram. But Fangio very much had no interest in politics, and I imagine... Yeah, part of it was I don't want to live this life. I just want to be a racing driver.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think is the case for a lot of drivers even today.
Yeah, Vettel was a prime example of that, I think.
Yeah, no social media or anything, just wants to be a racing driver, end of.
Yeah. But there we go. Okay, so a little insight into how an F1 world champion played part in the Cuban Revolution. But that's all from us now. Hope you found this as interesting as we did, or at least I did. I learnt quite a lot, as always, from
have
Tommy
you enjoyed learning
being I there. Always enjoy learning. It's always good to
learning
have
is fun.
Different stories
learning
coming
fun.
In but please do send us stories or topic ideas you'd like us to cover in this series. You can tweet us using the hashtag WTF1podcast or send us a message on Instagram. We always have fun looking into the weird and wonderful world of F1 for you guys, and if you've enjoyed this episode or even the series so far, do make sure you're subscribed for more and give us a rating and review on whatever platform you're listening to this on. It's really appreciated and helps us out a lot, so thank you.
We have had a good few reviews recently since we've started asking for them, so thank you very much.
Yeah, keep it coming guys, because we love to see what you think of this podcast series. So that's it from us. Our next That Time When podcast will be looking ahead to the Spanish Grand Prix in a few short weeks. Yep. And until then, thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
That's our thing now.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.